North Fork History Project, my name is Linda Nelson. Today is October 17th, 2011. I am here interviewing for the first time Ivan Windsheimer. This interview is taking place at 437 and a half Maple Drive, Kalispell, Montana. This interview is sponsored by the North Fork Landowners Association and is part of the North Fork History Project. Ivan, nice to see you again. Tell us about your early background, where and when you were born.
Born in western Nebraska, where good people come from. Ed Nineman came from there.
Yeah.
And went to high school there, joined the Navy, spent 4 years in the Navy, then went to Washington State, was there until 1964 when I came to Montana.
And so you came to the North Fork 1964.
That's the first time I visited the North Fork.
Why did you come to the North Fork?
A guy was working for me on the dairy, Wally Nolan. A lot of people know him, some don't. But his dad-in-law, Ted Ross, was running the store, and he wanted me to go see the North Fork. So we drove up there, and it was right after the 64 flood, so it was interesting.
Interesting, and did you see a lot of flooding in the area?
Well, the flood was over, but to see a new part of the country. And it was pretty rural then, more so than now.
And what are some of those early memories? How rural was it? What did it look like?
Well, there wasn't near as many people up there. And it was at a time when you could still buy an acre or two or three, put a little cabin on it, and enjoy the summer or the year-round if you wanted to, which is all gone now.
How much would that last?
Well, a few hundred dollars.
For an acre or two, three?
Yep, that's all. Hmm. At that time.
And what are some, what was it like, though, when you say it's not many people?
Well, there weren't as many people north of the store. There were quite a few, but there were more people around the store, I guess. Activity around the store than there is now, especially in the winter. A lot of activity around the store, year-round. Of course, the post office was there, but the people, they were all, you know, friends. And a lot of parties, celebrated a lot of birthdays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, you know, any excuse to get together, people had a little party.
And what would you do at the store when everybody came in?
Well,
would you have coffee, visit?
Yeah, I don't think we had coffee. No, it was just a meeting place, to meet and talk. Special meal day, always a lot of people there. And the people in the store, you know, they were well known and so.
I'm curious, did people shop at the store? Did they buy things at the store?
Yeah, I think there's a lot more going on in now, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the roads weren't good. They weren't nearly as good as they are now. So people didn't just hop in the car and go to town.
As you think back to that period, what other North Fork residents made an impression on you? It sounds like the people in the store. Maybe could you tell us about what they were like?
Well, Ted Ross, one of the pioneers there, I went up in 64. Ted got the store in the 50s, and he sold it in 66, I think. But he was one of the real, you know, he knew a lot of history about it, and he really loved the North Fork. And, for his people, Tom Ladenburg was interesting.
And how do you mean interesting?
Tom was an old redneck, but he was a good one.
Any other residents up there that impressed you?
Well, there were a lot of people there. I don't remember. No, not necessarily, I guess.
And did you know any of the homesteaders, original homesteaders?
Well, Ann Henson was the closest homesteader, I think, probably. Her dad homesteaded that Henson ranch down there, he and some other people. But most of the homesteaders are gone. I've had a few, and I don't remember even their names anymore.
And Ann probably had a lot of stories to share with you.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stories.
You remember any of those stories?
I don't repeat them.
Well, let's go back. What was daily life like, and how was it different from life in, you know, most parts of the country?
Oh, it wasn't any different anywhere else. It was quiet. People minded their own business, but they did visit.
And now there's social life in the North Fork. Sounds like people had parties.
That was a part of it. That was the biggest part of it. Mary and I used to play cards and skied and went over. The hostel was always busy. They had a lot of parties in the hostel.
I remember you telling me.
We took drives in the park, picked huckleberries, whatever.
Did you can those huckleberries, or do you remember making jam?
We didn't can them. We had a little freezer in the refrigerator and frozen, but we ate them by spring. Yeah, we didn't keep them.
Now, I remember you saying something about the hostel celebrated, everyone celebrated their birthday.
Well, not always the hostel, but yeah, that was pretty much the case. The biggest celebrations were Christmas that I remember of, and they had a few other things. John Frederick couldn't remember what they were.
And would you celebrate at the hostel or at the hall?
Hostel.
So it sounds like the hostel was the center of
it was down
the
there,
community.
Yeah.
Down in the meadow.
Yeah.
Okay. Were you a member of any organizations in the North
Fork Improvement Association?
And tell us about that.
We went up just to visit people and get to know other people. And by some quirk, somebody nominated me to be on the committee. And I was on a committee for 3 years. Didn't accomplish much, but it was interesting just to talk to people. Used to argue about people coming up there. Even then, there were some of the new people didn't want anybody else coming. But, and I remember especially Tom Ladenburg telling a guy, he says, you know, when you come up, nobody shut the gate. Now you want to shut the gate on everybody. What right do you have to do that? And he was a lawyer, but he didn't have an answer. Everybody knows who it is.
So you spent 3 years of the North Fork Improvement Association. Now, what was the North Fork Road like?
Bad.
How bad?
Well, there were parts of it that really had water sitting in it almost all summer from snow runoff and rains. And Larry Wilson used to call part of it the Big Ditch, which was true. and it was rough. Sometimes it took a lot longer to get to town. The pavement was there, but from there on it was bad. Then when they finally graded the road from the pavement up to where it goes into the park.
Camas,
yeah. Mm-hmm. That part was good. And the rest of it improved. Another part that was really bad was out in front of Ladenburg's before they put the oil pavement in there. That was just in the spring. You could hardly get through there. Full of soft boils, you know, in the spring when the water went out and the frost boils would come up. And without a four-wheel drive, you could hardly get through there. People complained about holes in oil, but I'll tell you, it was a lot better than before they did that. A lot, lot better. And the county commissioner had enough guts. People then didn't want it paved, but he said we're going to pave it, and they did.
How about the winter driving?
Well, the winter was like it is now. The road is the smoothest in the wintertime. You know, they plowed it. They plowed it more often probably than they do now. They used to have great big trucks plow it, and there were two of them. They'd go clear to the border and back in a day. And they didn't use the grader usually very often until ice built up to where the trucks couldn't take it off, I guess. But that was in the spring. But they plowed to where we lived, and Mary used to bring out pine coffee
for them.
Pine coffee for.
I bet they loved that.
Yeah, they called her the Pie Lady.
Pie Lady. How did you communicate with other North Forkers?
Well, we had a CB that we could reach some of them. Ooh. And up a little farther north, they had, what did they use for in the Navy? Otherwise, you just went and saw them. Huh?
You just go and visit them?
Yep.
Stop in?
Yep. We played cards with quite a few people.
So for fun, sounds like you had a lot of fun. What kind of cards? Special?
Well, Mary and I played with people who played pinochle mostly. And in the wintertime, they did have a poker circuit. I don't know if you knew about that or not.
Poker?
Poker circuit. They go to different places each week and play poker.
Oh.
And the women played, and the women and men were separate. The women went one place, the men and the other. But the women gossiped more than they played, so my wife told me.
So would the women go to one house and the men would go to a different cabin?
Yep.
Sounds like a good idea. You also talked about skiing.
Well, that was...
That was fun.
Yep, cross-country skiing. Well, just go back and forth. I used to go out the river when it was frozen. I skied up and down that river for miles. Just so quiet, you couldn't hear it. There wasn't a sound sometimes.
Oh, the wooden skis, I'll bet. Cross-country skis?
I snowshoed some, too. Mm-hmm. I guess I used snowshoes more than the skis, yeah.
Well, tell us about any of the major fires or floods or ice storms or any other major
events. Well, the 88 fire was the biggest one for us.
The 88 fire?
Yeah.
And why? How did that affect you?
Well, it burned everything but our cabin. We had two nice sheds and a garage and a lot of lumber that I was using for, and had planned to use for different things. But it burned all that. And we had one shed that, we had a lot of things stored, you know, our things from Christmas and things, pictures and a lot of things we had collected through the years. Of course, that all burned. But they saved our house. There was a county fire truck came up. He had a 5,000-gallon tank, and he parked down there and sprayed our cabin with water. And without that, it would have been gone. The tree in front of the house was burned on one side, and that wasn't 10 feet from the house. And all around the house, within 15, 20 feet, it was black.
Now, what were you there during the fire?
Part of the time, yeah.
You stayed there and watched the fire approaching?
Yes, we did. Well, first, it went around to see. It went along, let's see, it went up through where the store was, through that way, and then it came back along the river. That's when it burned our place. And it stopped right there. That's when they put some retardant and stopped the fire there.
In 88. How about floods?
Well, the big flood was in 64. That was before we came. The first year went up there. But there wasn't any big water then until 95. There was water, but never very high. Never got in our cabin until, when was it, 95 or 96 when they had that big flood up there? That's when it got in the cabin we built. I wasn't there anymore, but yeah.
Ice storms.
Don't remember any ice storms. We had a lot of snow at times. I had as much as 4 feet in the yard.
I remember you telling me a story once about in the winter, and you and Mary would go and sit out on the porch.
We used to go out there and bundle up. When the snow came straight down, it didn't blow much there. Not especially where we were. She used to go out and feed the birds at least twice a day, and we didn't watch her three times or four. And I could just see her. I had pads, you know, to the bird feeder and to where we parked the cars out by the road. But I could just see her head bobbing through. And the deer cleaned up under the bird feeders for us. And, you know, they were around the year. The mule deer were there in the wintertime and the whitetail in the summer. Huh. There was a difference. They changed. We had a lot of mule deer. And we'd see elk every now and then. There were quite a few elk that used to go through toward the river. I don't know where they went, but we could see elk, or hear them cross more than we could see them.
Are there any other important events that you remember from those days up at the North Fork?
No.
Any special event or special Christmas or special birthday? Or
we spent our anniversary up in the Northern Lights. Karen Feather always cooked us a nice steak and brought it to us. Yeah, that was. Yeah.
Would that be every anniversary?
No, we had a few of them.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Leadership.
Oh, people that I knew that I liked. Lee Downs and Tom Ladenburg and Bob Olson, Ted Ross, Ann Henson. People that I knew.
And were they considered leaders of the community?
Well, to some extent, I don't.
In any particular way? How would they be a leader?
Well, Lee Downs, I don't know what, he had some connection with the police force in town, so.
Ah.
Yeah, still does, I guess.
Now, we all know there have been a number of characters up at the North Fork. Can you tell us any of your recollection of some of the North Fork characters that have either passed through or lived there? So, Ivan, again, some characters of the North Fork. There have been many characters who have either passed through or lived there, and I remember you telling me sometime about one in particular that lived down in the meadow. Can you tell us about that character?
Well, he married a doctor's daughter that owned the land, and first time I met him, I walked over there because they're just a young couple, and we decided we'd see if we could be friends with them. And he was not civil at all, but we became pretty good friends afterward. And they came over, we played cards with them quite often. We had told them the first year they were there, they were living in the old cabin. They hadn't built that house. And we told them they ought to plug the cracks in the cabin because it was going to get cold. And she said, well, Dad doesn't want us to do anything to it. Well, I said, put cardboard in the inside at least. But they might have covered up some. But that winter, it was the winter, it got down to 40 below zero for 4 days in a row. And after the first night, they came over and they wondered if they could stay with us because it got cold there. And she said about midnight, the first night, she could hear all the jars, the canned fruit starting to crack and break. But anyway, they stayed with us a couple nights, went to the hostel one night. But, he decided to be a minister. He went to some convention, come back, put up a tent, and I guess there are a few people there. We went once or twice. Karen Feather went. I know I saw her there. Anyway, one night it burned down all the wind. Took the tent down and burned, and all the hymnals were scattered everywhere. And of course, he was the one that eventually, I guess he said he did it, but we all knew that he did. Then when they started another church up, there was a building right at the end of Skyline Drive, and he started one in there, and it wasn't long, and it burned down. And it was about 4 o'clock in the morning, and Sheppy come around to alert everybody. They lived right near there. And we looked at each other, and I says, you know what, you think what I'm thinking? And Upton says, yeah. And we all felt that he did it. Anyway, yeah, he did a bunch of crazy things and killed a bunch of John. He was raising some pigs for John Fredericks. And he said the bears killed him, but he was the culprit. I don't know if John ever got anything out of that or not. He made life interesting for a while, 2-3 years anyway.
Was he there long?
Not too many years. Well, after he left, he went down to Texas. He left his wife high and dry. He took the money out of the bank, went to Texas, back to that's where he's from. And a year or two later, I was at the store, and a guy from Texas came in and he asked Chris, he says, you want to know where this fellow was? And she said, he's gone. And he asked a few questions, but she didn't really want to give him much information, I guess. But he went outside, so I says, did you know this guy? He says, yeah, I worked in a dew pump plant with him in Texas. Well, I said, that's interesting. And he says, I heard he was kind of a firebug. I says, I guess he was. I know before he got here, he burned a trailer down in Washington State. And he says, well, I believe it. He says, when he was working at the dew pump plant, we had a high conveyor, and it had a net underneath, but we told everybody, don't trust that. Be real careful when you're up there. He says, one morning here was this guy down there laying on the floor, his back was hurting and hurting and hurting. And so they sent him to the doctor. And this doctor says, well, you know, you really can't always tell if a how bad a man's back is hurt. But he said, I can't find one single thing wrong with this one. So they kind of confronted him with it. Well, I said, it's getting better. So he went back to work. Then he said little fires began to creep up here, there, and everywhere. And he was always the first one there to put them out. Pretty soon, they finally caught him. He was setting the fire to get attention, I guess. And he told a story about a wife and two daughters being burned up in a boat in on a river in Texas. We found out that was all bogus. Never happened. But he was telling everybody the story. Then he used to tell a story about he had a broken pelvis that never healed. And her dad, his wife's dad, was a doctor. But he never let him examine him. But when his dad wasn't there, when his father-in-law wasn't there, he could walk pretty darn good. But when he was there, he had quite a limp. And then he was working at a meat facility, a packing facility in Washington. And he told everybody a cow stepped on his foot, and so tried to get insurance. And he almost got in real trouble. The name he was using, and it escapes me now, the FBI came to see him one day, and he was using a guy's name that was in trouble with the IRS. So he had quite a time explaining himself out of that, because he'd picked the wrong name. And Larry Wilson can tell you, well, not Larry, I guess Lee Downs can tell you about it. Story how he did a lot of funny things around the new cabin, but yeah, it was interesting. He was probably pretty famous for a while.
Any other characters come through?
I don't know. Some people thought Tom Ladenburg was, but I like Tom. We visited, not a lot, but he and my wife were good. My wife and his wife were real good friends. Mm-hmm. And we visited quite a bit. And she used to go down and see her. But Tom was really good when I sold my place and had to move out of there. And didn't have any place to put a lot of the things I had. He told him, bring them out and put them in the barn. And he wouldn't take a nickel for it. But we were. And he gave me support when my wife died. And he and Karen Feather and Robin Cox.
Sounds like
people know what he would. Nobody would have thought probably they were people that would support you, but I get more support from them than anybody else.
Now, how many years did you and Mary live in the North Fork?
Well, I guess 64, let's see.
You came in 1964?
Well, that's when we moved up there. We had been building the cabin for years, but and until 1991, I guess.
She died in
93, but we moved. We spent a year there, went to Washington for a year and came back. Spent another year, and then we spent another year there in our cabin, and then moved down to the valley in order for her to get better treatment. Mm-hmm. She had cancer.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you had some good friends who were
Well, Ed Nittema and Lee Downs and Tom Sluter, Robin Cox, they were people that would come around anytime. And they knew I was alone, so they, you know, even in the wintertime, somebody would show up every now and then. And there were a few other people, but they were the ones that kept track of me. And for that, Goldfowler carried it to when he used to come up a lot. And I saw he had a good many meals at his place. Many, many, many.
Whose place was this?
Fowler Carey.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But they were up there every month for years, and I saw them all.
Now, when you mention some of these people, I think about you caretaking. I know you spent a lot of time caretaking in the North Fork after you sold your cabin.
Well, I In the wintertime, I stayed at the one that Rob and Chopas owned, and that, what's the guy at the store? John O'Hare's cabin would have been in the wintertime, and Ann Henson's place in the summer.
Mm.
And Ann Henson's place, of course, was quite remote, but I really liked it there. And Tom came by quite often. They all did to see me. And it had some real bear encounters there, but the thing, it was so peaceful and so quiet. I usually stayed about 5 or 6 months. One year I stayed till, going to stay till Thanksgiving time. And a day or two before it started to snow. And I thought, well, I'll go out tomorrow. But the next day the snow was too deep to get out. But Ed Ninneman and Morris came down. They chained up, had chains on all four wheels. They got in there and then made a good track, and I followed them out. But I'd been in there a long while without somebody coming to me. But they knew I was there, so they helped me out.
And you mentioned animals, and you had some close encounters at the Henson place with bears?
Well, let me get this. Yeah, probably more encounters with, about as many encounters with animals as did humans. One of them was with our cabin that we lived in.
Okay.
One night, noise outside, and we always heard some noises but didn't pay attention. But it became more consistent. And finally, I told my wife, I better go out and see what that is, and it was dark. I took a 3-cell flashlight with me, and I opened the kitchen door, and right, we had an enclosed porch was screened in. A black bear had his head through the door, the screen door. So I hit it over the head, hit it over the nose with my flashlight. Well, he backed up, and they had a little deck out there. He sat on the deck, and I thought, well, what am I going to do with him now? But I had a little pellet gun there that I was shooting gophers with, so I pumped it up, and he just sat there. And I hit him in the belly, and all he did was grunt. But he walked off. Mary says, well, what happened? I said, well, he's gone, I think. And I told her what I did. And she looked out of the window, the kitchen window, and the light from the kitchen window went to a bird feeder. And here he was eating bird feed off my bird feeder. So I got my .22, and she says, you aren't going to shoot it, are you? I said, no, but I'm going to scare it. So I just cracked the kitchen door open, and I shot across its head as close as I could. I thought, that bear took off. We were several hundred yards from the river, but we could hear it clear through the brush. We could hear it when it hit the water in the river. And it made a lot of noise. I don't know, I might have skimmed it, but I know that bear never came back. but anyway, I hit him over the head with a flashlight, or in the nose of the flashlight. Then another black bear encounter we had one night. We could hear screaming, and it was just like some children screaming really loud. And just a little ways from the cabin, we went out, and it took us a long time, but here were two cubs, black bear cubs, up in the tree. And they wouldn't come down, but we told the fishing game the next day, and they came and got them. But they sounded just like some kids screaming. It was very... But anyway, I had a mountain lion encounter. Mary and I were walking down the river, and there were some deer. You know how they'll snort, dig with their feet when they're excited. And a couple of does were really raising the cane. The rest of them ran off. Well, we decided we'd go down and see what... We figured there was a bear in the woods. We went down to see the bear, I guess. And we're angling through on the old North Fork Road. There was a trail there. And we were on that. And there was a tree right before we, right at the end of it. And I went around one side, and the mountain lion met me on the other. We were probably not more than 6-7 feet apart. But I don't know how big he was. He looked really big. I looked at him. I said, well, you better get the heck out of here. So he just trotted down that other road, and I thought, oh, Mary's coming down there. Now what am I going to do? But she was right behind me, and she gave me the dickens for not keeping him there so she could take a picture. And I guess she expected me to rope him, but... anyway, then we had another mountain lion that was around one winter. And we only saw her once or twice, but we saw the cub quite often. But the tracks were there every time there was new snow. She had been around. But she didn't bother anything, didn't break into anything. I don't know where she was denned up at, but we saw her tracks a lot. And then another time, my son and his wife were there, and the kids were probably 2, 3, 4 years old. We were sitting on the porch in the evening, and they just got there. Here was a mountain, at just dusk, at the end of the driveway, here was a mountain lion ran across. And it was a big one, tail out there. And I thought, boy, that's pretty, you know, we talked about it. Next morning, my Sam says, we're going home. And my wife says, well, you just got here. You're going to stay a few days. He says, we're not going to stay with animals like that around. Not with their little kids. So they left. But anyway, one of the encounters when I was staying at Ann Henson's, I just come home from town one evening, and there's a little road run between the house and a grove of aspen. And I had parked across the far side on the road. I'd carried one sack of groceries into the house and come out for another sack, and Robin Cox drove up. So we were standing up far from my car and talking. We heard a sound in the brush and looked over, and Robin says, there's three cubs climbing a tree there. The tree aspen, they were pretty big. He says, they're grizzlies. And I said, well, I don't think a grizzly can climb a tree. He said, they can until they're 2 years old. But anyway, we watched them a minute, and then the old sow stood up. And I took one look at her, and I thought, well, I can't make it to the house if she wants me, but I think I can make it to the car. And she woofed, and the cubs came down, and she took off. They followed her. I looked over to Robin, and I said, what was you thinking? He said, I sure hoped your car wasn't locked. We weren't 3 car lengths from her. I mean, she was close.
Whoa.
Not more than 25, 30 feet. And she was good size. And she lost all those cubs by fall. Fish and Game says, one of them was run over. Somebody shot one. And I don't recall what happened to them. But they said she had lost them all by fall. Mm. Not too often. They have triplets once in a while. But they had her collared, so they knew, you know, who she was. Mm. Yeah. And then another grizzly one evening came up to the cabin. And my wife told me, there's a grizzly walking up here. And we'll watch and we'll see. And that's when we had all the flowers out in front. Mm. So I went to get my .22. And I said, I don't care what he does, but if he touches those flowers, he's mince meat. Well, then she went out on the porch. She wasn't 10 feet from him and took a couple pictures. But when he heard the film advance, little noise, he took off and went to the road out in front. Not very fast. But as it turned out, she didn't have film in the camera, and boy, was she mad. Oh, it would have been a picture right close. But he just sniffed the flowers. And he left. And then there was, this is quite a story. You know, Karen, the mail lady, I don't know what her last name is anymore, but the gal that delivers the mail.
Yes.
She's got a place up there not far from where Kent used to live.
Next 2 doors from Kent.
Yeah, okay.
Where Kent used to live, yeah.
But she didn't have it then, but it was that place. But there was a little, the only thing there then was a little travel trailer somebody had up there. They had dog food in it. Well, the grizzly had broken in there a couple times and ate the food and wouldn't leave the trailer alone anymore. So they called the people up there to monitor the bears, and so they decided they would tranquilize the bear. So a couple of them got up on the trailer and tranquilize the bear, but the bear went out in the woods at least 100 yards or more before it dropped, and it was pretty good size. Well, they couldn't do nothing with it, and they didn't want to leave it there. So Tom Sluter and I were having supper with Carrie Fowler that night, mm-hmm. Or Fowler Carrie, mm-hmm. And he was doing the cooking. He had just get ready to put the food on, and the three guys of the fish game, I guess they were, came in. And they said, we need some help to get that grizzly out of there. They told us what happened. So we all left, there were six of us. Went up there, had a tarp, and we rolled this grizzly, he was still tranquilized, onto the tarp. And if you think the grizzlies don't stink, you probably heard they did, this one did. Boy, it was loud. But anyway, we couldn't quite carry it, but there were six of us, so we drug it, we got to this little trailer, and Fowler says, well, go get your pickup now. And he says, well, they got a gate at the foot here. We don't dare to come in here with that gate shut. So we had to drag another 50-100 yards down to that trailer, I mean down to the pickup. Well, we finally got it into the pickup. And they had some old poles, and we got it in there. Well, then they had a bear trap sitting down on Ann Henson's place. They said, well, you guys go down and we're going to put this bear in the bear trap. So we got down there, and the darn thing started to come too. We couldn't have, so they had to tranquilize it. We had to wait till they went, and we got it loaded into the bear trap then finally. And then they come up, we had supper, it was 11, 12 o'clock at night, and we had supper at Fowler's, all six of us. We really had a good time.
What a story.
But you should turn it off.
What a story. Ivan, can you share a little bit about the hostel? I know you had some stories about how it started or how it got there.
Well, Wally Nolan was getting buildings from the old McFarland Ranch, and part of it was what he built the hostel with. And Wally moved, I know, at least four different buildings from there. But anyway, at the time that I was building my cabin, that's when John Fredericks came up and bought the hostel from Wally. But Wally built it, the main part was there first, then he moved another building and made the kitchen part and added on to it.
Now that Wally had a family, correct?
Yep, he had five kids, I guess.
And you knew him at the time?
Oh, Wally was a real good friend of mine. We were real close friends. Hmm. He worked for me on the dairy.
Tell us about the dairy a little bit. You had a dairy?
I managed what they call Gross Waters Dairy for 14 years, and Wally was one of the people that worked for me for a long time. We had, at that time, the largest dairy in Montana. We had up to 750 cows, dairy cows. And I started a milking time that other people had never tried before, and we milked at noon and midnight. And I had a good reason. By milking, if I started in the morning, if anybody had gone out on the town, they didn't come to work. And I had to rouse somebody else out to get the cows milked, or do it myself, or help do it. And so I decided, well, it'd be a lot easier if I had them come at midnight in the morning and at noon, and it worked out real well. We did that for quite a few years. Last few years, I had five girls working for me, milking the cows.
Mm-hmm.
And they did pretty good. They weren't probably the best milkers I had, but they were the most reliable. They were there every time. I didn't have to worry about them. And, but it was quite a...
Where was it?
And where was the dairy? Was it
West Valley. Out here, about 7 miles, or 8 miles out of town.
Out of Kalispell. Ivan, can you tell us a little bit about huckleberry picking?
Yeah, a couple of things. Babe and I, that's Ed's dad, went picking a few times. And we were up there one time, and we'd gone up to the notch where the lookout was anyway. And, you know, we started to pick, and we had gone down this whole logging road first. And we'd gone up on the side hill and picking and crossed a few draws. And finally had our buckets about full, and we decided time to go home. And Babe says, well, you know, we're in the right place. This is the road. So we started. We didn't go very far. And I was just, Babe, this isn't the road we came up on. Oh, yes, it is. I said, well, I did not climb these big logs. He looked at me and he says, well, you're right, we didn't. And he stood out there and we looked around a minute. He said, well, I know where we are. This is where I got lost yesterday. I said, what? He says, well, I did. He said, this is where I got lost. I know where we are. We cross over this knob, we come down to that road, and it'll lead us up to where we left the car. It was quite a walk, but we made it. And Mary and I was up there in about the same vicinity, Huckleberry picking one fall, and we each had a little whistle where we could alert each other if we needed to. And all at once this whistle went off, and I could hear her yelling, and I thought, oh man, she must have run into a bear or something. So I got over there, and she had stepped on a rotten log. Her bucket was clear full of berries, but she had stepped on this rotten log and spilled the berries. Mm. And she was mad. And I'll tell you, she picked up those berries, and I'll bet there wasn't one or two that she didn't find. She found them all. She said, I'm good. I picked them. I'm going to take them home.
And then you had another story about you and Ned's dad. Not sure about that one.
Oh, no, I don't.
Well, Ivan, I'm not sure if you want to share anything about your Navy days or?
Not particularly.
Okay. And I'm sure you've seen a lot of changes in the North Fork over time. Is there anything you want to share about those changes?
Well, the roads got better.
Yes.
A lot better. Mm-hmm. Didn't always smooth, but it's a whole lot better. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the people that wanted that road paved. Not a lot of people, but some of them thought too many people would come over. But they come up anyway. I don't think it would have made any difference. But it sure would have been a lot easier on the cars and going back and forth. But and the people that have came up in later years were people that were able to build in most of the time, you know, nice houses, and a lot of them brought up all the conveniences they had in town. Washers and dryers and dishwashers and the whole bit. The only thing that was any different, they didn't have people going down up in front of the house, I guess. But that, you know, that was their right to come. And but there, I met some really nice people too. A lot of them that I knew and some of them I didn't. But the big change is that, you know, you can't buy an acre or two of ground anymore. Maybe that's good. I don't know. And the one thing I did not like, after we sold our place, they wouldn't let us vote in the association anymore. I didn't particularly like that because there were quite a few people up there that, you know, lived there. They didn't own any land, but that's all right. No, I don't know. It's a different environment now. The people that are around the store don't seem to visit with the people up north, vice versa. And a lot of the old timers are gone now. Ann Henson, Tom Ladenburg, and McFarlane's.
Well, Ivan.
Sit down.
I want to thank you for sharing your North Fork memories with us. I truly and honestly appreciate the time you've given us, and the stories will be remembered by all of us. All the new folks that are there. Well, I think we treasure your memories more than you'll ever know. And we appreciate that. Thank you again.